A lot of the things that we currently buy are not made in the States. So I think what you're going to find is all of these little expenses that we pay are going to go up.
That's what we need, is more inflation.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Hello, Mark, and welcome everybody to Abraham's Wallet. We're joined by a special guest that we saw just a few months ago. Isn't that right, Mark?
We did. We saw him. We're seeing him again in HD. Last time Jed was on, we sort of said there's a whole lot of unknowns. And it was pre-election, and we said things could zig or they could zag. We don't know who's getting elected. And we know more today than we knew back then. If you're hoping that we're going to tell you how the tax code has changed under the Trump administration, that is probably going to be Jed on Abraham's Wallet, part three. But what I wanted to do is, I've been seeing a lot of wild, I'm coming to learn that the accounting world is sort of like the financial planning world, in that you don't get social media notoriety for saying things like, your investment selections depend on your own personal risk tolerance and goals. You get retweeted by saying, NVIDIA is going to fall by, 98% this year.
Of course.
You should flee to gold and Dogecoin.
It's why Jim Cramer has a career.
Of course. So this type of stuff is happening in the tax world too. I'm seeing all sorts of, since we last had Jed on, I have put my proverbial money where my mouth is, and I have hired Jed to help me with tax planning.
Fab.
And so I came to him this week and I said, Jed, I'm seeing all this stuff. There's crazy things being said that Trump's going to do. And he kind of patted me on the head virtually and said, yeah, this happens every time. So we're going to talk through some of those wild scenarios. Jed's going to give us a voice of reason, but also the wisdom of a grizzled veteran of many seasons of tax law change. Before we get too deep into this discussion of tax changes, I think you brought up something, Stephen. You said you're excited about the government spending being slashed. And that just, it felt like a natural way for us to just quickly check in on our people, because I don't know what the government is doing at the time that this airs, but I know what the Parrott family is doing with spending.
That's right. Slashing spending.
The Department of Parrott Efficiency, the DAPE, the DOPE is in full effect, and we are mid-low-do Feb. So I just wanted to check in. How's it going? How are you wrangling the eye rolls and corralling the excitement? And, we're kind of in that final 10-day push here. So yeah. Well, how does it feel for you? Can you see the finish line? Tell me what's up.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll give you a report from the dome. And the Department of Manual Efficiency is that the first week of LODO is quite novel. And everyone's been talking about it for the last 11 months. And we're kind of ready for it. And there might have been purchases made in a rush at the end of January looking toward it. That might have happened a little bit. And there's a little bit of, this is a fun kind of experiment. Oh, it's beans and rice tonight. That's kind of fun. So there is a cutting. There's a natural downturn of expenditures, which we believe is a very healthy pattern to follow for 1 month of the year. Just say no. What always comes to mind is this verse from Titus that says that the Holy Spirit teaches us how to say no. And our flesh is constantly begging for yes. So to let's just practice no a little bit. Here in Cincinnati, we have the full fat wonderland of Grater's ice cream, that when your body walks by there and your heart goes, they've got this thing called hippo chunk because of our famous hippo at the zoo. And they've got this wonderful ice cream in there that I know is going to make my body happy. And then your spirit says, no, body, you don't get to win this time. Starting to develop that thing, when it's a novelty, as it is for the first couple of weeks of February, my family does pretty good. And we are, I think this airs the 19th of February. I can tell you that we're starting to slow down the excitement machine, and we're starting to grind it out, and we're getting low into the freezer, and we're getting deep into the pantry, and the gift cards have all been spent. I save up two or three coffees on points. Oh, goody, I get a free coffee. They're gone now. And now we're twiddling our thumbs watching the calendar. And so I'm getting some grim looks. Yes. I'm going to get a sideways. It probably hasn't happened yet, but it's probably going to happen in the next 4 days. I'm going to get a sideways comment from the wife about, we have to do this? Is it have to be for the end of the month? And then at some point, I will probably get the word legalistic thrown at me at some point toward the end of the month. And I will smile blithely and say, only a few days left in February. So anyways, that's what we're doing. And by gum, let me just say, I'm training myself with Lodo Feb, as well as I'm training for the generations. And we are going to be people who can celebrate and extravagantly but with intentionality, strategically, say yes to some things and spend money wisely. We're going to learn how to say no sometimes. And you've got to train that muscle. It's not just going to grow on its own. You got to practice it. So that's what is happening in manual world. What about you, Mark?
I love that. I would just echo what you said. We have the same arc in the Parrot House of, oh, wow, Dad pulled out everything. He took a fun photo to put on the Abraham's Wallet, social media of our pantry. And who knew there was quinoa? And
yes.
The medium-aged daughter says, I hate quinoa so much. We get past that. And I made a special effort this year not to pre-stock the freezer.
So that's good. That's good of you. That's big of you.
In the past, I said it when we did our kind of pre-Lodo episode, I have been guilty of seeing like, we'll throw the brisket in the cart at Costco and that'll feed us for a week really well. But this year it's legit. So whatever that grocery number is, I think we will beat last year. Cause last year we pretty much failed. I think we came in like $250 under our normal grocery budget. Whereas in years past, it had been like less than that for the whole month. So I think we're trending towards a good year, but maybe not a record breaker.
Okay. Enough on Lodo. Everyone, if you're doing Lodo, we support you. We cheerlead you. Keep doing it. Your family will be grateful in the long run if you can teach them how to say no to themselves, teach them how to turn the budget down when money is tight. These are great skills to have. Luckily, I had a mother with a German background. German, Scottish background. So that was really easy for her to turn down the money. I learned that as a child, and it's served me well all my life. So we're done with that. Now, Mark, let's get to the wild list of crazy speculations and talk to me about what people are saying about Donald Trump's crazy second term's financial policy, fiscal policy, we call it. What do you got for us?
Well, number one word from an investments standpoint that was concerning everyone going into the Trump presidency, it's tariffs. The whole world said, okay, we may have gotten a little bit slap happy with the free markets thing, and we may have put the United States into a position where they just have no chance of competing with foreign countries that can make things cheaper. So maybe a little bit of tariffs, maybe a little bit of protection of U.S. industry is okay. You guys both are sitting in Ohio, the heartland, the center of the steel industry and the auto industry. And a lot of these things are places where they've felt the most impact of kind of no protectionism, basically. So people said, okay, fine. But then Trump starts, he started talking a little crazy. And he said, you know, maybe we'll just tariff things so that nobody buys anything except American goods. And those of us who have studied economics know that when you start jimmying with markets like this, you can crash the whole thing very quickly. And so this week, the stock market blew up. It was a result of him sort of rolling off of that. But the first big thing, because we're in a budget deficit, so we either cut spending or we increase revenues. Those are the two ways that we can fix a budget that's not balanced. The tariff thing is on the revenue side. And so a 10% tariff has now been rolled out as, what if we just put a 10% tariff on all imported goods? How much do you think a 10% tariff would generate in additional revenues for the government? Give me your Dolphins board.
$50 billion.
$50 billion is what Stephen guesses.
I'm going to go with $49 billion.
And $1.
Okay. Well, the estimated impact would be increasing revenue by $1.9 trillion.
Oh, my stars.
$1.9
trillion.
A 10%.
I was a little off. A
little bit. I was more off. That's crazy.
So, yeah, that would have a big impact on our national debt. Do you guys know, just so that we keep it in mind, the target that we're trying to fix here is the national debt, how much we have borrowed. Do you know what that number is? Anybody have a guess without
39 trillion, something like that?
Yeah, you've been reading the news. It's 36.2, right as of 2 days ago. So
trillion, by the way, trillion with a T.
Yeah, the mind can't comprehend it. It's just
we cannot.
You know, 15 years of this import tariff, and assuming we're not spending more than we are bringing in, which is a humongous assumption. Right now, we're spending about 750 million more than we're bringing in. Sorry, billion more than we're bringing in. It was a Dr. Evil moment.
We're depending on you, Doge. Keep cutting.
So, Jed, just a quick question. I know this isn't like an income tax or a tax question necessarily that you would deal with, but how do you think that this would trickle through to the everyman that you and I are working with if we just suddenly slapped a 10% tariff on the world?
I mean, a lot of the things that we currently as business owners buy are not made in the States, because we're getting them off of Amazon, which they're getting them from other countries or that kind of stuff. So I think what you're going to find is that all of these little expenses that we pay are going to go up marginally, and we're going to feel a little bit of an increase unless we make changes, right? Unless we change where our spending habits are. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I personally don't check every single transaction that I make, whether it's made in the United States or not, right? If you are that person, God bless you. Tell me what website you go to in order to check that. You should have no issue with this sort of thing, right? Because really, this isn't going to drop anything that's made in the United States. It's going to increase the cost of the things that come in. And so my family are Honda people. Let's just talk cars, right? We love our Honda. Right. And so, so if I was in the market for a Honda, then that is going to cost me more than it previously did. And I'll have to weigh that event against, you know, buying something, that's made in America. So
the Parrott family, like the KinderConnect family, is all in on the Japanese vehicles. We are Toyota loyalists, and my wife has announced that 2026 will be the year of a new Toyota for our family, which is fair because the old Toyota it will be 13 years old at that time. But Stephen, you guys, the Manuel family, the dome, the realm of the dome, they're German.
The rock of the dome.
You guys are German car aficionados, whether they be Volkswagens or the Daimler-Benz company.
I suppose we are.
And so it sounds like we're all in for a ride. The place where tariffs start getting tricky is I can't imagine that there's an American company that could make a car good enough for me to want to buy it, even if it was 10% cheaper. So I'm a little bit thinking this is just a tax on me because I'm still buying the Japanese car kind of no matter what it costs until it gets up to a much more than 10% increase.
Well, isn't the idea that the Toyotas of the world would move all of their manufacturing to America and that we would only buy Toyotas that were made in America? And wouldn't that count to avoiding the tariffs?
Because I know my Tundra was assembled in the greatest state in the Union, right there in Texas. So,
well, and Honda's, we've got a place right up here in Marysville.
And they would still have these tariffs slapped on them?
I think what would happen is that the inputs to the cars would be taxed.
Whatever ships over before gets put together, I think, is how that would work.
Maybe Honda and Toyota start buying American steel, and who knows?
I would say also with tariffs, I think that a broad 10%, I think less, you're not going to feel it. It's going to be spread over so much stuff that you may not feel it as much. Right. Obviously, we're talking about cars, but how often are we doing that? How often are we going and buying cars? I don't know about you guys, but I run my cars into the ground, so I don't plan on buying a new car anytime soon. It could be more impactful if the tariffs were a little bit more targeted, and then you would be able to understand the impact of them and you and your family, right, a little bit more. Otherwise, I think it's going to be more of like a slow burn. It got turned up a couple degrees.
Yeah. I just looked at this cough drops that I'm holding right here. You might have heard me cough already in this episode. Manufactured in Spain, 10% more. Here, boom. That's what we need is more inflation. So, okay. Moving on. This one is one that I came to you yesterday about, Jed, and said, really, is this going to happen? And the idea is to repeal the SALT deduction entirely. Now, SALT stands for state and local tax. This would be estimated to generate $1 trillion a year in revenue. And it would remove the $10,000 currently allowed deduction that you get for paying state and local tax, whether that's real estate or income tax or municipal taxes, whatever it is. Right now, you're capped at 10 grand. It wasn't that long ago that we all sort of panicked because that 10 grand cap was new with the tax cuts and job acts. So before that, we could, if you had a couple vacation homes in Texas where the property tax is high, just deduct it all. Now you're capped at 10,000. What does this mean to the average person listening to this?
Well, just for some, a little bit of information on this, is like, why does this matter? And so, you know, we are allowed to, as individuals, take the standard deduction or itemized deductions, whichever one's larger. So when Trump passed his first one back when he was president, the first go around, he basically had a large increase in the standard deduction, but then removed some of the things that you could take as itemized deduction. So he gave with one hand and then reduced in the other hand, right? And so a lot more people started to not itemize and started going with the standard deduction because it was such a large increase, okay? So this idea of removing the SALT deductibility in totality would only affect the people that itemize. So if you currently don't itemize, if you take the standard deduction, not going to affect you whatsoever because you weren't deducting it anyways. So is this going to affect my 17-year-old daughter? It will not. Okay. Is this going to affect, you know, somebody just out of college or that kind of stuff? Probably not. Right. However, my good Abrahamic people, we are givers by nature. Right. And we should be extravagant givers. And so a lot of that is deductible. And so even when that SALT cap has happened, most of us probably still itemize because of mortgage interest, right, which is a deduction, as well as charitable contributions. So mortgage interest, charitable contributions, and then that $10,000 would probably pop you up over the standard deduction, therefore allowing you to itemize. So let's say you are one of those individuals that give generously. Let's just say you don't even have a mortgage. You're so amazing. You've paid off your house or you bought it with cash, even better. And you just so happen between the $10,000 and your giving, you are $5,000 over the standard deduction. And so you get to itemize. If this SALT deduction was taken away, you would then drop below that item, the standard deduction, and it would cost you $5,000 worth of a deduction is kind of how that would work.
Well, we're worried about that, right? Because we have a strategy right here in our back pocket that we can use to respond to that. Do you want to?
That's right. I do.
A quick review?
And I'm pretty sure there's a pretty famous NFL person that says it all the time in a commercial, and it's bundling. We got to bundle Ruski, right? Isn't that what they, are we going to get tagged on YouTube because we're using their trademark or whatever? But
Who is it State Farm? Is that who this is doing this?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Who's their NFL spokesman?
Oh, well, which one isn't? It's Patrick Mahomes. It's basically the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
Which, whether you like them or not, there it is. I'm just saying. So.
Now, do we want to pause here and just say where the whole idea of a bummerooski came from? That was the first iteration of this whole thing. Do you know where the bummerooski came from? Anyone?
I got nothing.
No, I think that's before our time, Steve.
It is before your time. And because it was while the Houston Oilers existed and our coach was Bum Phillips and he had a trick play that he called the bummerooski. So there you go. That's where the bundle rooski comes from.
So you don't totally discredit me as a millennial. I had multiple Warren Moon football cards, and I was a big fan of those Oilers.
Okay. Yeah, so, me too.
Okay.
Proceed.
Okay. So, but bundling is kind of a strategy where it's like, okay, we're going to try to get up over the standard deduction in this year, right? To pre-deduct, right? I'm going to put a whole bunch of money in charitable contributions. I'm going to do whatever I can to try to get up over that this year. And then over the next few years, I'll take the standard deduction and save up the money to be able to do it again that third or fourth year and that sort of thing. And so this is where donor advised accounts come in super handy to be able to do and that sort of thing. We used to do the same idea with the real estate taxes until they put that $10,000 SALT cap. That was another way that we could bundle. But if they do away with that, then that's kind of where it's at. Because really, if they do away with the SALT cap, the only things that you could itemize at this point would be healthcare expenses, not insurance, but medical expenses. But you have to hit over a certain dollar amount, 7.5% of your adjusted gross. Mortgage interest and charitable contributions. It kind of starts limiting the idea of itemizing in general.
Do you think that's a goal? I mean, obviously that simplifies the tax code. It probably, I know last time you were on, we talked about what do you do if you have one of those CPAs or clients, really, if you're a CPA, that's like, all right, I just want to deduct everything, run it all through my business. Does that, it almost feels like, and I don't want to prescribe nefarious sort of motives to this, but it feels like they kind of want to just get everybody down to the standard deduction. That has implications, like you said, for givers especially, but is that true or am I being too fearful?
No, I mean, it feels like that because if you think of, I mean, if we go back again to the TCJA, right, the very first large tax bill that President Trump put through, he removed the deductibility of investment fees, the deductibility, the SALT cap came on, unreimbursed employee expenses removed. So there were already a number of things in the itemized world that got removed at that point. And so if we went to the point of removing the SALT deduction in totality, it's only a hop, skip, and the jump away from kind of doing away with the itemization in general for individuals. And so last time we talked about the toolbox, right? It would be removing tools from the toolbox for a lot of individuals if they did that away. Now, I'm not saying anybody's talking about getting rid of charity. We, again, don't give because it gives us a tax deduction. However, it's very nice. And so it would make people probably think twice. I think charities would be really hurt by that. However, one option, which they've done in the past, is they could move that charitable contribution outside of itemization and create it as a deduction from income. I think they did that for a little bit. If you gave up to $600 of charitable contribution and you don't itemize, you still got to benefit from it. That could be an idea of a way to help keep the charity side available, but maybe do away with the other itemizations.
And just to be clear, when I said this to you the other day, your first statement was, okay, that's an interesting idea that's being floated, but also there's a whole contingent of people floating the exact opposite, which is to completely remove the $10,000 cap and say, go back to the old way and add all of the state and local tax deduction that you've got. So we aren't saying for sure that the state and local deduction is going away.
No, and I'll say, if I'm a betting man, I would actually argue that it is going to go the other way. I believe that there is enough push from both sides of the aisle. It is a very politically advantageous chip to hold that they can use it as a negotiation to get something else, is to give this back. In other words, to remove that cap and allow full real estate, full state and local taxes to be deducted as an itemization. I think that's the way it's going to go. If I had to make a decision right now and place my bet.
Cool. Next one, this one I think is probably the most far-fetched, because this really does get us to what we just talked about, which would be a virtual elimination of deduction. But the next $1 trillion revenue item is eliminating home mortgage interest as a deduction altogether. I just think it's interesting for our listeners to know that's at least being floated as an idea.
I did not know that was even on the table. That's a little scary to hear, honestly.
Yeah, to your point, it's as aggressive as removing the SALT. And because, again, at that point, what are we talking about as far as itemization goes? You might as well get rid of itemization and then just change around if you want to continue to make charitable contributions, right? I mean, and there are already some caps around mortgage interest, right? If your loan is over a certain dollar amount, your mortgage interest starts getting limited of what you can deduct. They also made some changes on the TCJA as far as having a home equity line of credit and some AMT things. And you used to be able to have it no matter what, and now it depends on what it gets used for and some other pieces. So they've already started to put some guardrails around that. But again, I think that there are enough powerful people with very large mortgages that take advantage of this that are not going to let this go through. It's great talking points. It's great, you know, little things to get people to listen to, whatever, but I don't see it as probable. So if I was putting it on a scale of, yeah, that's likely to happen, or there's no way that's going to happen, I put it closer to that. Man, that's fairly doubtful in my opinion.
Yeah. It's concerning to me to hear that even floated out, because there are some things that have a financial value and that also have a moral or ethical value to them. And I feel like this credit on this deduction, it underlines the value of encouraging people to own property. And I would hate to see that removed from a government standpoint. It's kind of like the deductions for children. And Mark's itching to say something.
I'm straining. If you're just an audio listener, I don't know how to emphasize this with my voice.
Just grunt as you speak.
Well, Steve, I agree with you for sure on the kid thing. I would love to see us go full Romania and say, once you pop that fourth kid out, you're exempt from taxes for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I love that. But every time the government has gotten involved in trying to juice homeownership, whether it's through artificially like propping up the GSEs, good old Freddie and Fannie that I used to work for, or through credit and rebate programs, it almost always has had a really bad effect, which goes back to like monkeying with markets. Not everybody should own a home. And I think for us here, we can huddle and say, okay, Abrahamic family leaders, you're going to probably own a home in America no matter where you live, because you're going to be diligent over generations with your money and you'll be able to afford one. But the problems arise when the government tries to make home ownership a goal and a metric for success.
Mm.
And they allow people like the maids in Las Vegas who were getting loans.
Yeah, of course.
for homes they couldn't afford, and they were being artificially pushed through. And so anyways, that's the only reason I wring my hands a little when we say
that's fair.
Moral value homeownership.
I think it also pushes people to maybe overextend themselves as well. I'm not against the deduction. I'm just saying I think that it has this mental thing where it's somebody like, oh, it's a tax deduction. And so all of a sudden it's like, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but my daughter has said to me, girl math before. Oh, it's girl math. So, you know, the cash they find in their pocket, that's free money. It doesn't cost us anything. So if we spend that, that's not a big deal because that's girl math. And so the idea that, oh, well, if it's tax deductible, that means it's like free somehow. And I'm like, no, you're still spending the interest. Like, you don't get to keep that. So, you know, I think that it having being a deduction, I think just psychologically, it also feels less expensive.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And just so everyone listening knows, the guy who just talked about girl math is a guest appearer on Abraham's Wallet. We would never use the term as denigrating as that. So,
of course not.
I'm offended by it, but I'm going to get past it.
Okay, here's one. Steven, I want your take on this one. Because you tend to get riled up about such things. Eliminate non-citizens from federal health benefits. This saves us $35 billion. So what this would do is, depending on what sort of your political affiliation is, you'd either call them illegal aliens or undocumented persons. They're eligible right now for federal health care programs, and they can even get things like Medicaid. And this would completely boot them from those programs. Good idea, bad idea.
Wow, you are goading me into trouble. Is this the subtitle of this episode?
I don't know. I was listening this morning before we started this to some people talking about some of Trump's big immigration policies and his push, and they were interviewing. I don't really know anything about this guy's politics or if he's a good guy or a bad guy, but the guy in charge of ICE immigration enforcement right now was talking about how we're going after people who are illegally in the United States and have committed crimes. And the CNN lady goes, what if you find other people with them who haven't committed crimes but aren't documented? And he goes, well, we'll deport them too. And she goes, even though they haven't committed any crimes? And the guy starts laughing and says, actually, they have committed the crime of being here, and it's against the law.
Their presence is a crime. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll say this very quickly, and I won't back it up with anything because this could be its own episode. And I know I'll offend people in my own city if they listen to this. The Bible has very strong things to say about the treatment of foreigners. What it says is basically those who do not belong in a family inside your town, they're not from your town. They're from Afghanistan, and you find them in your town. There's an insinuation that they are welcome in the nation, but they don't have a home. They don't have a family. I have been that way. I have lived on foreign shores, and I didn't have a family. And God's people did to me what's commanded in Scripture. You take the foreigner under your own roof, and you say the benefits of family life that we enjoy, we extend to you, who is effectively an orphan. You don't have a family here. We will loop you into this God-worshipping family. You can worship him with us on the Sabbath. You can come into the rhythms of our home, which also, by the way, comes with responsibilities. The Bible does not speak favorably. It has very little to say because it wouldn't have been accepted in the day for an antagonistic foreigner to have violated the laws of the land to come into the country, force its way into the country, and then start leeching that country for resources. The Bible doesn't have good things to say to that person. And while I would say we're going to deal mercifully with whoever's in front of us, from a government law standpoint, which is what you're asking me, I say somebody who is wrong to be here, they did not follow the rules to be here. And by the way, I'm married to a second-generation immigrant family, and they busted their rear ends to get into this country legally, and they waited, and they did everything on the up and up, and God bless them, That's the melting pot that was dreamt of. You know, that's when our country is called the melting pot. That's what was dreamt of. Anybody who forces their way in illegally into our country, it's a very simple for me. They don't deserve any benefits. They are criminals by their presence. I like the idea of saving all that money. Send all of your complaints to mark@abrahamswallet.com.
No, I'm generally endorsing this message. So maybe we lost listeners there. I don't know. Anything to add, Jed, before we, would you like to keep your prestigious firm unsullied by this conversation?
Keep the shine on the apple, as they say?
Not at all. I could not have said it better. There's a place for helping and that sort of thing. And then there's a place where things get taken advantage of. I've never been a fan of forced charity. You know, I think that does something when you're forced. I think it removes it from being actual charitable. And so I love the idea of, hey, no, like you should, you know, come in legally and have a family bring you under their covering. And if you want to do it, great. And to your point, I know people that have worked very, very hard to become citizens and do the work and wait and do all of that stuff. And their opinion is probably even stronger than yours, Stephen.
I'm going to throw this in because I have to just say, I always want to quote my in-laws on this. My in-laws live in El Paso, Texas. We have driven from their home to kind of as a tourist attraction. Let's look at the wall. Look, this is Trump's wall, et cetera. These are Mexican Americans. They are beside themselves at the idea of illegal Mexicans running into the country that they have worked so hard to get into. They are beside themselves. They want them all locked up. They do not have bleeding hearts about illegal Mexicans coming into our country, or God help us, illegals from other countries coming in through Mexico. That scares the poop out of them. They don't want it. Anyhow, move on.
Unfortunately, even though we're all in agreement on this one, $35 billion savings. So that's like couch cushion money.
It is when compared to 36 trillion.
How about I offer you $796 billion of savings? What would you say to that?
I'm listening.
It's almost a cool trillion.
Yeah. Here's all we have to do. The hilariously named Inflation Reduction Act, which generated all sorts of new spending. I don't know if you guys have ever taken an economics class, but spending, printing more money, putting more money into the money supply does not result in your dollars being worth as much as they were before you put more dollars into the pool.
That's how that works.
Anyways, there was this thing, the Inflation Reduction Act.
I remember it distinctly.
And they added a ton of green energy credits. Now, I think this one is a little interesting just from a headlines perspective, because who's running that Doge, Stephen? Who's the famous billionaire that's heavily...
Elon Musk.
And what's his most visible in American daily driving life company?
The Tesla.
Tesla. Well, there's credits that you can get for buying a clean vehicle. You can get credits for building an efficient building and other energy credits. If we got rid of all of those, we would save $796 billion. Jed, how often do you, when you're doing a tax return or doing some tax planning for somebody, how often do you see people using these green energy credits that are just kind of normal Americans? Is the Tesla deduction a popular one in your world?
No, less than 5%. I would say one of the bigger ones would be the idea in there that they changed the law to previously a lot of home stuff that you could do, insulation, windows, doors, exterior windows, exterior doors, and that sort of thing to help with heat, right? They changed that to used to be like a lifetime deduction. Like once you change your HVAC and it qualified, you're done. Like you'll never be able to use this thing again. They did change it recently to say it's actually a per year now, that you can do. And so this has really incentivized some people to do things ongoing. They don't have to wait for one big year to try to do it, and then that's it. They'll never do it again. They can actually do it ongoing year over year. And so that's definitely helped some people. I've seen a lot more people go solar. I've had a lot more solar deductions here recently, putting that on top of roofs and that kind of stuff.
You know, wire?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little sunshine there.
True. Yeah, well, we get some. It's just cold. That's the thing. Like, we get the sun, but it's just, you know, freezing. So I've seen more of those. I've dealt with, like, I had somebody do a renovation where they did geothermal. That's a big one. Like, if you can cross that bridge, go for it. Because that's a nice deduction. That's a nice credit for sure. But mostly most people have been in the more of the like insulation, doors, windows world. So a little less on the vehicle side.
Yeah. Every time I'm doing a financial plan, my little software is like, you should recommend to this person that they take advantage of the green energy credit and buy an electric vehicle. And I think if they don't want an electric vehicle, to your point, Jed, a deduction is not a reason to go and spend money.
It's a one-time thing, right? And so unless you are, now I have people that are just absolutely in it, right? They're like, they're all green. They want, again, they got the solar, they got the Tesla, they got all this stuff. And that's great. I mean, if that's where you're placing all your eggs, and then yes, it totally makes sense to do that because it is a nice credit. It can reduce things. However, if an electric car ever came in our house, my wife would probably disown whoever's driving it.
Yeah, I don't have interest in a Tesla. I rented one year for Stephen and I's Texas tour, and it was really fun to stomp on the gas pedal, but I couldn't make it just maintain a consistent speed. So I know they're great. If you own a Tesla, more power to you. But
God bless you.
Not for me. Let's do one more. I got a call the other day. I've probably talked about this on the pod before, but I got a call from my alma mater. We don't say this in the intro to the podcast anymore, but I went to Princeton University, and they have a big honking endowment. Their endowment right now is $34.1 billion.
You should ask them to help us out.
We were saying, hey, Mark, would you give us money? It's tax deductible. Donate to the school and help, you know, keep Princeton strong. And I said to them, and this is why my kids will almost certainly be denied admission there if they ever wanted to go. I said, I cannot think of anything more immoral than giving you money. It would be like walking into a room and there was a bunch of needy people that were not eating. And I saw Jeff Bezos in the room, and I walked up to him and I said, I just feel the need to be generous, and I'm going to give you $100. It's stupid. And so one of these proposals is to begin taxing college endowments at 14%. I love it. I think, and there is a floor on this proposal that says, like, a small college that's just trying to, like the private school my kids go to, we're trying to build an endowment. Not to grow wealth, but just to allow kids who maybe can't afford the school to attend. That is protected, and the limit is actually really high. It's like $1 billion that you could have before you start getting taxed. But I love this idea. I think taxing these schools that are really just investment companies, I'm for it. Any thoughts from the Peanut Gallery?
I'm here for it. I mean, it, the tuitions for those things and all that kind of stuff, it's just compounding on the problem, right? Is like, oh, well, we have this huge endowment, therefore we're just going to raise tuition so that way we need more in the endowment. It's just this evil, it's just this cycle, right? It's just this cycle that just keeps eating itself. And that just doesn't seem, you know, when's enough enough? Like, when it's like, no, we have enough to satisfy Princeton's needs for the next 3 years. We are not going to accept, what if a college came out, we're not going to accept any more money, right? We're going to stand, if you decide to give it to us, we're just going to funnel it over here to this orphanage or this, you know, food bank or something like that. And because truly, what do they need that much money for? Are they concerned there's a run on something? I think it's wild.
I read something about that maybe it was Princeton, it's certainly an Ivy League school of Princeton's ilk, that they could give away all tuition for all of their students and not touch, and they would still make money by the end of the year because of the size of their endowments. It really is perverse.
Yeah, it would be. They've even talked about making the school free, which I think is an interesting idea, is that if the school is free, you suddenly draw everybody who even might be able to go applies, and you've got an even more competitive pool.
Right.
But yeah, it's weird. I would be for that one. Jed, would you mind kind of closing us out with some thoughts on, we're going to hear headlines for the next probably years, but especially in the coming months, about what's being proposed. When should our ears perk up? When should we kind of smile and nod and say, yeah, we'll see? What do you think is important as the average person hears changes coming to tax code? What should they be paying attention to?
I think you need to pay attention when it has gone through the House and it has at least had some sort of vote or discussion in the Senate to see if they are going to go into some sort of negotiation to modify a bill in order to pass on to President Trump. Because anything President Trump says cannot be done without those. And this is not a specific political party statement because they both have done this. The House loves to pass crud that they know that the Senate is not going to pass. And so, yay, this thing passed the House. Well, it's dead on arrival at the Senate. And so it's very easy to post, well, I said this and I said this, and you're going to hear the politicians talk about what they have done, but it does not mean a thing until the certain signatures have been placed on the docs. So I would not even read a document until I know that it has gone through some sort of Senate, or at least has gone through both houses, you know, both sides, to see what the flavor is. You're just getting yourself hyped up for, to be honest with you, nothing. Because a lot of times what comes out the other end of that is nothing like people are talking about. All of these little nuances have changed. When the TCJA was going on, I can't tell you how many times I had to read the thing, because when they were doing it, it was all retroactive. So we had to make very, very, very quick moves. And so the devil's in the details, right? Those little things are going to be important and they can change very drastically. So, you know, just because you read, oh, it just passed the House, that wouldn't even spark my interest.
Good advice. If you guys want to see more of Jed, we're going to put how you can find him in the show notes. And until next week, I'm just going to encourage you, keep going strong with your Lodo Feb. And whether or not you're doing it, run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. We'll see you later.